Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Would it be right to call you the founder or co-creator? What's the proper terminology, Greg?
I think so. I founded the project, so you could call me the founder.
All right, so founder of Intercoin, which is something we've talked about a lot over the last year or so here on Free Talk Live. And recently, Intercoin came back on board as a sponsor here on Free Talk Live. And unfortunately, due to some ridiculous bail conditions that I'm underneath, I am not legally allowed to talk to Mark Edge. And Mark, for listeners who maybe are new to the show, if you're new to the show, you might not even know who Mark is, because he hasn't been on very much at all in recent months.
He's on vacation from all the hard work he's been doing.
Yeah, well, he's kind of like on a permanent vacation, it seems like, and he is...
He is. Gotta love it, man.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, it's nice to be Mark in that case, but it's also not nice to be Mark because apparently he's losing his mind and claims that post his COVID infection, he claims he's more forgetful now than he's ever been.
Yes, he provided us with a live read and doesn't recall having written it.
Yeah, so one of Mark's roles with Free Talk Live is he kind of handles the sales end of things. So Aria, you and I, we handle the program end of things, and Mark does whatever needs to be done in order to facilitate bringing people on as sponsors of Free Talk Live. And usually that involves, you know, talking with a client about what do they want us to say.
Well, as you know, Roger Ver, he heard your show and he started Bitcoin Cash. Because he also felt...
He didn't actually start. I want to correct the history. Roger personally denies this. He says he did not start Bitcoin Cash. He didn't even know about it until it had already split off.
He just supported it, right?
After you know, assessing the situation, he decided to throw his support behind Bitcoin Cash. But as he would point out, he also supports anything that works. So Roger has purchased Dash, he's purchased Monero, and he's publicly announced those things as well. So Roger just wants cryptocurrency to be used as peer-to-peer cash, and so he'll support anything that you know moves that ball forward. Anyway.
Oh, fantastic.
Go ahead.
All right. So I didn't know that.
Yep.
Actually, sidebar, I think Elon Musk did not actually start Tesla. He bought it from previous owners, but I could be wrong.
He started Dogecoin, didn't he?
No.
That's a joke, everyone. Don't get up in arms.
Al Gore started the internet, I'm pretty sure. okay. So Intercoin asks the question, what if crypto would actually go mainstream finally? What if communities would use crypto for more than just speculation and investing in currencies, hoping that they will go up? Perhaps what would that look like? So Intercoin focuses on maximum utility and adoption.
Now, there is a difference, right? So like launching a token, you can normally just go on to, you know, some website and say, I want to make Aria coin. And then our Aria token, and then you can put in, you know, you want a billion of them or a million or 20 million or whatever, and then poof, there's 20 million Aria token.
I don't know about those, but I have made ERC-20 tokens before.
That's what I'm talking about, on ERC-20, which is the Ethereum blockchain. So it's super easy to do this. When somebody creates one of these community currencies, Greg, is this going to be a token on the Intercoin blockchain? Again, we're talking about the vision for down the road, not that this is available immediately. Or is it going to be its own cryptocurrency? How's that going to work?
So at the moment, right, Intercoin lets you, you know, start a coin on Ethereum, but also any Ethereum-compatible network, such as Binance Smart Chain, Matic, which is now called Polygon, as well as dozens of others that support the Ethereum virtual machine. Even Solana will be supporting the EVM. It's sort of the one that all the smart contracts are written for at the moment.
So I have a question then. If they can already create a token using ERC-20 and Ethereum, why would they do that with Intercoin? I suppose what you're presenting as Intercoin is a competitor to Ethereum?
Not necessarily. So you can think of it like this. ERC-20 is a standard. Think of it like HTTP is a protocol. With Intercoin, you would know from the blockchain data the statistics on how the money is being used. So if I airdrop money to, let's say, Haiti after an earthquake, I can see how the money statistically on what is it being spent. that's the idea of Intercoin, tying it all together. There's voting, governance, universal basic income, smart economies. That's really what we're building.
So this is bigger than, just to bring up something Aria brought up during a break, this is why you would say somebody that wants to have this community coin wouldn't want to just adopt something like Dash or Bitcoin Cash, because they would want something that's more customizable for what they're trying to do?
Yeah, it's a bit like saying, permit me to say this, it's like having Notepad to write some text versus having, let's say, Google Docs, where you can collaborate on documents, share them, and insert pictures, and do it all in real time and get things done. That's currently the state of the crypto space is a bit like DOS or Notepad or something like that, and we want to make it much more user-centric.
So I had a couple of questions about the voting thing, because that's definitely something that very much interests me as far as the potential for distributed blockchain technology in general.
At this point, the Intercoin token that's available is actually what's called the investor token. So it's ITR. It's on the Ethereum blockchain at this time. And last year, I was mentioning that what we were promoting last year was that people could, if they were in the United States, if they are what's called accredited investors, they could buy this thing, which basically means that most of our listeners couldn't buy it. Greg, how has that changed now?
Yeah, so basically, by the way, I should say, I think I might have one more segment. If you guys have more questions, I'm happy to answer.
Okay.
So Intercoin, let me kind of back up a second. The SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, was set up in 1933 by the U.S. government, because in 1933, they said there's a lot of people who were, you know, hawking all kinds of crazy things that to grandmas and other things. So they didn't want fly-by-night things like this, and they made the Securities and Exchange Commission, and then they made all these, the Howey test comes out of the court case. Basically, it says that if people have an expectation of profit from the actions of others, and they're kind of just giving over their money and hoping that things will go well, then that is governed by U.S. securities laws. And if you want to be a community, to start your own community, reach out to us, by the way. This is the other thing. You don't have to be an accredited investor. If you have a business, you have any kind of community, reach out to us at intercoin.org, and we can get in touch, and we can help build the community currency for you, help build your voting system and everything else for you. That's what we can do.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the other token, which doesn't exist yet, right? There's ITR, which is the investor token. That's available. That is, you can go to intercoin.org and learn about how to acquire that. But this the Inter, which is the actual, you know, eventual Intercoin token, it's not out yet, right?
Right. Inter is supposed to be the bridge currency between communities. It's mm-hmm. the currency, you can think of it like gold. So when banks needed to settle their balances and differences, they would use gold, and they would move gold from one place to the other. It's a bit like the Federal Reserve System, where the banks are moving things around with the ACH, automated clearinghouse payments. So it's not exactly the same, but Intercoin is used in that way. And so it has different properties than an investor, because if you get investors to buy it, they can also dump it in the future.
Coinbase is like the big bank, basically, of crypto. They're not technically a bank. Actually, I don't think they filed to become a bank, unlike some of their competitors. But yeah, they likely will.
They're the Bank of America of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, they're that kind of a big corporation that loves themselves some government regulators.
Mm-hmm. Well, because Coinbase generally is the one who wants to write the regulations, so...
Yeah, and then a few days ago, I saw the CEO of Coinbase, Brian Armstrong, who has been the CEO of Coinbase as long as I can recall. He's the guy who I saw at a party. I've told the story a million times on the air, but for listeners just tuning in for the first time, it was at one of these like shindigs at a convention. It was a Bitcoin convention early on. I was standing there in a group of four people. I was one of the four. There was an attorney, this guy Brian Armstrong, and another guy from another now defunct trading corporation. And he and this Brian Armstrong from Coinbase were talking about how they were going to create a white hats society of companies that would analyze the blockchain, because remember, Bitcoin transactions are public. So they would analyze the blockchain, and then any cryptocurrency or any Bitcoin that had gone through the hands of a illicit transaction, meaning they could tell, for instance, if it had gone through the Silk Road at the time, this underground drug marketplace. Millions of crypto holders have been earning yield on their assets over the last few years. It makes sense. If you want to lend out your funds, you can earn a return. Everyone seems happy. And what he's referring to are a variety of different websites out there. Now, these are not decentralized finance sites. These are centralized finance, but they're outside of the banking system. Some of these sites, like, and I'm not endorsing any of these things. I'm just giving you examples of what they are. Nexo is one of them. Celsius is another, and there's others. CoinLoan is another. There's several of these things.
And what these
there.
Do is you send them some amount of Bitcoin, and mm-hmm. they loan it to people, and then they pay you a certain amount of interest that you earn on the Bitcoin that you loaned them, correct?
That's correct.
And they, a lot of them get up to like 7, 8 to 10%.
Yeah, on the stable, so-called stable coins, you may get 10, 12, 14% return. APY or R, forget which one, but, you know, per year. You might be able to make that kind of return, which if you compare that to a bank account.
And your 0.025% interest or whatever.
If you're lucky. I mean, if you go with an online bank where they don't have all the overhead that, you know, the big banks do, you might push close to 0.75% or like 0.5% on you know, putting your money in the bank.
2 years ago, I had a bank close one of my accounts, and they're still holding the money, and they're still paying interest on the savings account. This is a savings account, right? So yeah. It's got a better interest rate than others. Yeah. And it in the last 2 years, it's made like 12 cents.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
If you don't have custody of your coins, they're not really your coins. They're Coinbase's, and Coinbase will let you have them as
Hopefully.
They choose.
Well, and that's the kind of thinking that people have gotten used to. Like, people will say such complete mistruths as, I have money in the bank. No, that is impossible. You do not have money in the bank. What you have is on the bank computer that your name is attached to a string of numbers, yes. But it's their money.
The bank has money that supposedly belongs to you, and maybe they'll let you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they like why you want it.
Yeah. And so Coinbase is entering into that same territory. They are basically that same territory, but for cryptocurrency. And they've built their business on being maximum compliant. They want the government to know who they are, where they are, what they're doing, how they're doing it. They want to, you know, cozy up with regulators as much as they possibly can, because they see that as the way to survive, right? Like, and I understand why businesses do this, right? This is the same reason. It's basically the same reason why a business person will go to the town government and say, hey, town government, tell me what hoops I need to jump through so you guys don't send men with guns into my business and tear my S apart, right? Because that's what people know is going to happen, right? People must know at some level that if you don't go down to the city gang and get their blessing to go into business in most cities and towns on the, you know, in the United States, if you don't get their piece of paper, then at some point, and it's probably
they drive a Bearcat through your door.
Yeah. Gensler, in his confirmation hearing, said, quote, it's important for the SEC to provide guidance and clarity. Sometimes that's a clarity that'll be a thumbs up, but even if it's a thumbs down, it's important to provide that, he said back in March of this year. Armstrong continues. He says,
Is he alleging that a government official didn't mean what that government official said?
Yeah.
How scandalous.
He says, if you don't want this activity, then simply publish your position in writing and enforce it evenly across the industry. He's begging the government to do. He says ostensibly the SEC's goal is to protect investors and create fair markets. So who are they protecting here, and where is the harm? People seem pretty happy to be earning yield on these various products across lots of other crypto companies. Shutting these down would arguably be harming consumers more than protecting them. And by preventing Coinbase from launching the same thing, albeit at a fraction of the rates, Coinbase was only proposing 4%.
I was curious about whether or not they would offer competitive rates.
Not even close.
I didn't think they would, because they have the name recognition. They're the ones who jump through all of the government's hoops, so they don't have to offer as much.
He says, so they're creating an unfair market by letting all these other companies do what Coinbase wants to do, but threatening Coinbase. He says, in May of this year, I traveled to D.C. to meet with every regulator and branch of government I could.
You sad, pathetic little man.
I mean, can you imagine? I feel bad to some extent for Brian Armstrong, because he really thought that he could appease these people. He really thought that there was some amount of, putting him, subverting himself in front of them.
He really thought that you could negotiate with terrorists.
Yeah. And he's being taught a harsh lesson here. Now, whether or not he's going to take anything away from this,
it doesn't sound like it, because he's still praising the tuna
system.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, oh, well, we understand. We want to please regulators, and they still do. They want to talk. He wants to be able to sit down and have a chat.
Help us understand your perspective so that we can share it.
Yeah, we want to quote unquote lean in to sensible regulation, even when it's difficult or expensive. Is what he says.
And what a good sub.
Yeah, and as you pointed out, Peakless Mountaineer, that this is because they want to lean into it because they want difficult regulations, because they can do it. They've got the attorneys.
Well, and that's why he keeps asking for these regulations to be applied to everyone.
Yes.
That's what they're looking to do, is make sure that no one else can get into this game, because I already have a foothold here and I don't want any competition.
Well, in his case, he doesn't have a foothold in loans, but they've got a huge foothold in an existing market.
Right.
It's a huge marketplace. There's, I don't know how many millions of users they have, but it's got to be a lot. Coinbase is one of the biggest players out there. The federal government wants you to believe that every single thing in the world of cryptocurrency is a security.
Right, because that allows them to regulate it, because it's something that, in theory, would fall under their umbrella if they can just convince people that it is a security.
And from what I've heard, this is something that different branches of the government disagree on, because Congress said that, no, cryptocurrency is a commodity, like milk or gold or anything like that. And now the SEC is coming along and saying, no, Congress, we know better than you. It's a security, you know, one of the things that we can govern.
And the IRS is saying it's an asset.
According to Investopedia.com, the term security refers to a fungible, negotiable financial instrument that holds some type of monetary value. It represents an ownership position in a publicly traded corporation via stock, a creditor relationship with a governmental body or a corporation represented by owning that entity's bond. So when you have a library credit, you do not own a piece of library.
No.
The corporation. You do not own, there's no, like, you don't get voting rights in library. You don't have any sort of ownership stake.
So first off, fungible. There is nothing fungible about pretty much all cryptocurrencies.
That's true, unless it's like Monero.
Yeah.
I guess the moral of the story here is the government isn't your buddy, and they're not there to help you. They're there to screw you. They're there to take advantage of you. They're there to control you. And they don't care about you.
Yeah, they have constantly changing rules that they enforce through violence, and they aren't even good at following the rules that they have from one day to the next.
Yeah, and to Brian Armstrong's credit, at least, he is correctly pointing out here that, man, they're trying to figure out what the hell the rules are. They can't figure it out with all their attorneys that they have. Again, this is all him complaining on Twitter, but there's another story that basically covers the same points, written by their legal team, written by their chief legal officer, Paul Grewal, saying essentially the same things and sort of telling the story. Like, their legal people that they pay God knows how much money to every single year can't make heads or tails of what the SEC wants. So they try to talk to the SEC, and the SEC is like, we're not talking to you.
Well, his issue, I think, is that he attempted to notify the SEC that he was going to do something instead of requesting their permission.
Well, I mean, what's the difference?
Well, he's coming at it from this perspective of, I don't have to ask your permission. I mean, they're the state. They want you to ask their permission. And mm-hmm. If they don't say yes, then you're not allowed to do it. You don't get to just notify them, hey, I'm going to do this, and that's going to be it. You have to, please, I would like to do this thing. Will you give me permission to do it? It's a monumental difference between notifying them and asking their permission. Consumers are making 7 to 12 to 14% interest on their loans right now that they give to some of these companies.
Yes,
I think they're
right.
doing just fine versus the 0.0.
Oh, but Aria, there's so much risk. I mean, these are companies that are not FDIC insured. What if they go out of business?
Then they go out of business.
But and then the consumers will get hurt.
And a person learns a valuable lesson about doing more research into a company before they invest in them. But some of these have been in business for 4 years.
Which is a long time in the crypto sphere.
We can't let people decide their own level of risk. What's next, legalizing heroin?
please.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would do a monumental good thing for the people out there who are addicted to it.
So
we have fewer deaths from fentanyl.
I don't know where this is going to go. I hope that these companies do not close up shop. I hope that they do not stop offering their product to people in the United States. Because it's a cool product. I mean, look, you can put money in a bank, as we pointed out earlier, get a really crappy return, and still have no guarantee that you can walk in and withdraw those funds. So to act like giving your cryptocurrency to one of these centralized companies and getting a return on it is somehow more risky or dangerous, I don't buy it.
No, banks have a long history of being reckless with your money. I remember when I was a kid, there were Democrats in my family, there were Republicans in my family, and they didn't spend a lot of time at Thanksgiving dinners arguing with one another about politics. But now, on social media, they unfriend each other, they block each other, they just don't have anything to do with each other.
Do they even go to Thanksgiving dinner together?
I don't know, because I stopped going, so probably not. But
okay.
One in seven people, in a totally unrelated report that I saw today, one in seven people have blocked someone, a friend, a real life friend, or cut them out of their lives because of their position on vaccinations, specifically the COVID vaccination.
I've seen them saying online, I saw one person the other day say that she has lost every friend that she has and is completely alone where she lives.
I believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. These party lines have gotten drawn deep.
And it started with the polarization on social media, but as expected, that has since spread into the real world. And we saw it most, I think, we saw it begin fading into the real world during the Trump-Hillary campaign, when there were people on the left specifically who were refusing to have any association with their family members who mm-hmm. supported Trump.
Remember, there were all these big protests after mm-hmm. Trump got elected by leftists. And I went down with New Hampshire Independence flyers to this protest, and I'm like, all right, well, yeah, I'm going to hand these out to the lefties and see how many of them are interested in New Hampshire declaring independence from the United States. Because, you know, I think everybody should be interested in independence. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a political issue at all. But obviously, there are certain times at which some people might be more interested mm-hmm. versus less. And so I figured this might be one of those times. And the younger people were a little bit more open.
Okay.
Than the older people that were there. And the older people I spoke with were like, well, no, we got to redouble our efforts. We've got to go back in there and we've got to retake D.C. We can't just let these people win.
Why not?
That's the thing.
It's a stupid game they're playing. Yeah. Just stop playing.
They can't walk away from it. They feel like they have to get even, that they have to turn the tables. They have to go back in and keep fighting. They can't just, like you say, walk away.
It's just like people arguing when everyone wants the last word. Eventually, just stop arguing and walk away. It's not worth it.
Now, did you try doing this during the Trump era?
Sure.
Okay, yeah, because I think that's the only time they'd be receptive to it on the left. Is okay, now that the opposite...
No, this was as soon as Trump took office. They were having protests. That's when I went down to do that. I also did it at Black Lives Matter.
Do you remember shortly after the election, the first Trump election, there was this site that came forward that listed a bunch of propaganda sites that provided false information or allegedly false information? It never got a lot of steam, but it certainly existed.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it just sort of laid the groundwork for Facebook and Twitter and YouTube to have this apparatus in place where they could just censor whatever content they didn't like, as we're experiencing right now on YouTube.
Because it was on that blacklist, they would just say, okay, you can't post that? Is that where you're, so they're relying on that
list? Was a list of news organizations like Breitbart and some others, and, you know, some fringier ones like...
Newsmax?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just ones that you would have to hard write.
Yeah.
Propaganda, basically. And it was just this website that listed them as, like, these are not trustworthy. And it was never really clear who exactly was behind it, other than it was someone on the left who was upset at the right.
I remember that there was at one point, maybe it was related to this, like, Facebook was working with other social media sites to have, like, a co-owned blacklist, essentially, of sites or people or something like that, opinions or whatever, like, that there was some sort of... working together that they were doing, so they had like a tool that they could use and add things to and like sort of co-blacklist things. Do you remember?
I don't remember that, but I'm not surprised to hear of such a thing. I mean, the censorship on these platforms is strong. Making it stronger isn't going to help the situation here, and it's certainly not going to fix the polarization.
Oh, come on. As soon as people get censored, I'm sure that their opinions will become less extreme, and they won't feel that they're targeted in any way.
Well, let's see about what people think about old Fauci. He's got some more opinions, and he is certainly not being censored. The latest video here, according to Disclose.tv, he's calling for unvaccinated Americans to be banned from air travel, as our co-host Bonnie is currently in the air travel system right now. She missed a flight tonight and won't be able to come back to New Hampshire, unfortunately, till tomorrow.
I have a flight next week. What are the rules on that?
Well, they're not changing them yet, but so you'll probably be able to make it out in time next week because it, you know, it's government, so it
doesn't. Will I be able to make it back
too fast? That's that is a good question. Let's go on here with what he had to say.
If we get the overwhelming proportion of the population vaccinated, we will get to herd immunity.
I'm not opposed to gene therapy or hormone splicing or gene splicing, whatever people want to do with their bodies, as long as they consent to it. Look, I don't care if science has a technology to splice you with a lizard, go for it. But humanity isn't at the point yet where we are prepared to be programming our bodies to do things using technology.
But the point that you're making on this, Peakless, that he's using previous tyranny to back up the current tyranny is the most important takeaway here. And we knew that they were going to say this stuff because this is how they always do it. Oh, well, of course you're going to need to have a passport. You have a driver's license, so of course you... We've already had driver's licenses, so you got to have a passport. Well, of course you're going to need to have a vaccine passport. We already have passports, so you got to have a vaccine passport. I mean, so they always build on... They take little steps, and before you know it, they've got total tyranny.
Well, of course we're going to have to regulate your exhalation. We already regulate the power that comes into your house.
Yeah, they regulate all kinds of gases.
Yeah.
So why shouldn't they regulate the gas that comes out of your body?
Exactly.
It's
a dangerous greenhouse gas, the fact that you breathe.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.